Welcome to Cypher Stories, giving a voice to the homeless. The number of homeless people in Britain continues to rise, and in the first quarter of 2018 reached 320,000. That's one in every 200 people.
The last rough sleep account revealed that on average, 52 people sleep on the streets of Birmingham every single night.
In Cypher Stories, Giving a Voice to the Homeless, we meet some of the people living with homelessness and using the charity Cypher Fireside to help them navigate through this extremely difficult time.
In this episode, we recap some of the stories we heard in 2019, ahead of a new series due out at the end of April. But more pressingly, we're in the middle of the corona pandemic, which impacts us all, but is especially dangerous for the clients of Cypher Fireside. Here's Cypher's chief executive, Carly Jones.
Very sadly, last Monday, we had to take the difficult decision to close our drop-in service for the foreseeable future as a result of the coronavirus crisis. We were seeing around 140 to 160 people coming through our doors, and the numbers were continuing to rise as people were becoming more and more challenged by the situation. We took the difficult decision to close. As directed by government guidelines, we were not confident that we could keep people safe and well and give them the support that they needed.
We'll hear more from Carly shortly, but first let's reacquaint ourselves with some of the Cypher clients and their stories.
And what time of night do you think about trying to find somewhere to sleep?
You're thinking about it throughout the day, because when you're walking around in the day, you're looking at locations or unused premises or even doorway recesses to see if they're feasible for putting your head down for the night.
So even after nearly 4 years of living like this, every single day is as precarious as that?
Yes, it is precarious, very precarious.
The next step is, obviously, I'm bidding for a property. They help you bid for a property, you go to college. At the moment, I'm addressing mental health issues like anxiety, PTSD. I can't say the name of it, but I'm in a fellowship for addicts. So just work on myself and kind of start figuring stuff out.
And how is your relationship with your family?
It's a lot better now. I'm like so fortunate, and it's been like a work in progress, a lot of effort, a lot of making amends. I think they're really pleased that I'm sober now and I'm working to go into college, I'm bidding for my own property, I want my own home, and I'm ambitious and I've got purpose again, you know.
Excellent. Well, you're 27, you've got the world at your feet.
I know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is great. And so you're doing the hair and makeup course, and ultimately what do you want to do with that?
I want to become self-employed. And I would like to help like homeless people in the future. Obviously, do think around helping them with grooming and help them set up a place where they can come and have a shower and eat and do their hair for them, give them a haircut, especially women on the street. So I'd love to help women.
Brian, who's in charge of the clothing store, is shouting out names on the list. It's two at a time in here right now. So he's running a tight ship in they come. What are you after in the clothing store today, Abdul?
Well, clothes, one jumper. If I get a nice jacket.
Crack on. It's like supermarket sweep in here. It's like fill your basket as quick as you can.
30 or 31, 1,000,
please.
Trousers, 31.
Right.
That's 32. Here we go. 32 up there. Do you want a jumper as well, Abdul?
Yeah.
A fleece?
Yeah.
About that?
If I do see one, I'll keep it for you.
Yeah.
Quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice and bright, good condition.
Yeah, condition is all good, yeah. Abdul like good condition.
Abdul like good condition. You want to go out in your good threads, Abdul?
1 week, 2 week, and then bring back.
I'm Abdul's fashion advisor. Give him a nice red fleece, looking smart. Do you think as mothers we take more of that responsibility for how our children turn out than fathers do?
Yes, because my husband left me, my second husband left me as a single parent, and the responsibility was totally on me. I tried to bring them up as best I could, but I had a nervous breakdown and they were taken into care. My daughter when she was 14, my son when he was 11 was taken into a secure unit because he was out of control. My other son at 12, my other daughter at 8. were taken away in one day. I thought I was going to die. I did everything I could to get them back. They are back now. That was a long time ago. But I felt absolutely helpless. And as a mother, I thought, awful. But all through it, I knew I loved them. And they loved me. And eventually, they were given back to me. But they were in care a long, long time.
And what about their fathers?
Well, I have three from one, and he's not in this country. And the fourth one walked away as well. And I was left with the total responsibility of it all. And I had a breakdown, and I hit alcohol, and it nearly took my life, took my everything, my children, my home, my self-esteem, and my will to live.
My name is Darius. So firstly, what would you change about the world? It should to be more precise. What would I like to change about the world? Because in my current position, I cannot change almost anything in the world. I can say something, but like in a small group of people, and no one cares, or even if they care, they are not able to do anything. So if I had a power to change anything in the world, firstly, I would take care of amount of CO2 in our atmosphere, but that would be by decreasing the quantity of the cattle, which produce most of the CO2 and ammonia, to be honest, from their poops, which was proven recently. So the like heating effect is not only caused by cars, and to be honest, it's in very small fraction caused by cars, but it's caused by the mass cattle production, producing the meat for humanity. Yeah.
Towards the end, I spent more time taking drugs to kill myself than I did taking drugs to get high.
And were you actually thinking that I'm going to kill myself?
Yeah. A couple of times when I did it, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't let anyone know that that was my plan. I would literally just go out throughout the day, buy and accumulate loads of different types of drugs, go home on the night, and then just literally take them all, and in the hope that I wouldn't wake up in the morning. And for some reason, a couple of times where I've done it and I haven't told anyone, I've been found by random people, which then started me thinking, well, maybe I'm supposed to be here for something. Last year, when I went to prison, that was for some really old offences, which at the time I couldn't see why the judge was sending me away for a driving and a shoplifting. The driving was 3 years old, the shoplifting was 16 months old, and I'd been doing so well. But it turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because whilst in there, I was only in there for 4 months of the whole sentence. I got off my medication, I was on a drug-free wing. So it was, again, it was like it was meant to happen. I was meant to go away to give me that little stepping stone to come out and be clean. And the minute it came out, I went into what they call dry houses and carry on going to my NA meetings. And now I still do that. I'm still in a dry house, which has strict rules. If they think something's going on or you start acting a little bit different, they'll drug test you.
You mentioned a drug-free wing in prison.
Yeah.
I mean, as someone who's never been to prison, you just assume that, you know, prison's drug-free. What is that?
It was in Oakwood Prison, and although it's called a drug-free wing, obviously now and then something does get on the wing, but there was a manager on there that was really strict, and there was no tolerance there. If you got caught of having illegal substances in you, you was gone off the wing.
And in normal prison situation, are the drugs really prevalent?
Yeah, horrendous. Continuously what they call code blues. That's basically an inmate who's lying on the floor and needs medical assistance because they've gone over on spice, heroin. It's horrendous, man. If you're going in with a drug problem, I know people that go in with a drug problem and come out with a worse drug problem than they went in with.
And there could be people going in with no drug problem, come out with a drug problem.
Yeah.
Tell me about the work you're doing here as a peer mentor now.
I needed something to do with my life with regards the time throughout the day, and I was getting a little bit bored, and I seen a couple of the guys and they put me onto Every Step of the Way Here, which is a Fulfilling Lives project, and it's to do with systems change. So we go around a lot of these meetings, a lot of forums and stuff like that, to change services for the better. So it's not about going in and saying, you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right. It's about going in and saying to people, look, this has really worked, but this isn't. And it's changing them little systems that are in place. A lot of it that's coming up at the moment is short sentences, the exempt housing crisis, because whichever way you look at it, it is a crisis in the fact that these places are exempt from the normal rules of housing society, so, and they're dealing with the most vulnerable people. What we have, you can't learn out of a book. We've got life experience, and we use that now to put up across to people to say, look, I've been there, I've done it, I've used this service, I've used that service, and appeal to people in a way that technically hasn't been done before. But not just that, it gives me a purpose as well. I get up every day and I'm happy to come in and I'm happy to do things because I know I'm making a difference. And if I can change the way things are for one or two people, look, I'm all the more for it, man. I love it. If I can just change one person's life, that'll do me. Because it's one person less that's got to go through the misery and pain that I had to go through.
Big question, but if I were to ask you, what one thing do you think could happen that might change that cycle between homelessness and addiction?
I think they need to stop treating the homelessness as a problem, as more the reason why the homeless is the problem. The supported accommodation thing, I think, is horrendous. It's been put in place and people get paid a higher rate to support people within these premises, and some of these premises, it's nicer for them to live on the street than it is in some of these properties. Until you can start hitting that sort of side of it, people are not going to want to come off the street. At the same time, I think people giving people money on the street needs to stop, because if the money line's gone, there's not going to be any much reason for them to stay there, sort of thing. They're going to have to start getting the help.
I had postnatal depression, and because I didn't know how to deal with it, I chose alcohol and drugs. Now I'm in recovery, I'm getting the help that I needed.
And what's your housing situation?
At the moment, I'm in supported housing in a dry house. However, if I was to drink again, I'd be homeless.
How many kids have you got?
I have 3 children. Mm-hmm. So I have a 9-year-old, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. So I'm in court for them in June. If I'm still clean and sober, I'll get contact with them. So, yeah.
So is it your last pregnancy that ended
in my 1-year-old, depression? My daughter, yeah.
So that's quite a quick spiral, isn't it? From having a baby to getting postnatal depression to having an addiction being in a dry house.
Yeah, I lost everything.
How much harder is it trying to deal with addiction while you're also pining for your
children? Very hard. It's very hard. I have days where I'm like, I give up. Like, I want to give up. But then I look at the bigger picture. So, like, getting my kids back and, like, court's really happy with me. And health visitors, doctors and my psychiatrist, they can all see now what needs to be done, kind of thing. So, and that's why I'm doing working with ESO, to use my experience to help other mums that suffer with postnatal, because not a lot of people know about it, especially pregnant women as well. They don't even know about postnatal depression.
And do you think that substance abuse, you know, is something that a lot of people with postnatal depression turn to?
Yeah, I know a few people that don't, they just think they're literally going crazy, and they just see the drinking and taking cocaine or whatever they use is the way out, and it really isn't. Because there's no one, they don't know who to turn to or talk to. They just go to a doctor, and the doctor only has like 10 minutes with you in a room, so there's not much they can do with you, really.
And how long is it since you had any contact with your children?
November was the last time I seen my children now.
And how's that feel?
I'm okay with it. I'm all right to talk about it now. I wasn't before. But I know I need to talk about it so I can help other women.
It just seems like an insanely cruel leap from having postnatal depression to having to live in a dry house and basically be homeless and to not have your children. I mean, I kind of can't get my head around how the world lets that happen.
Yeah. And social, obviously, because I was in addiction, social don't see the bigger picture. They just see me as being an addict. I'll get talked over, if that makes sense. Like, we'll go to meetings and that, and they base me on my past. They don't see how well I'm doing. So that's why I'm in court and stuff, to prove how well I'm doing and everything.
It's a kind of funny funny time of night where most people who are going home from work have gone home from work, and a lot of the people that are left around here are killing time. There's lots of people in McDonald's that look like they're just in their killing time, somewhere that's open and somewhere that's warm. Sitting on the floor outside the Ivy restaurant, I found Chris. So, you're off sleeping tonight?
On the market, on the tables.
Okay.
Because I will be honest with you, I am alcoholic. I start drink after 4 years sober. And when I start drink in November, I lose my job, I lose my flat. And when I go to Saifa and they explain to me, you are too proud because they give a paper for hostels. And I said, I don't need hostel, I just need sober. I am here for 11 years in England. I pay tax, everything, and they say, you can take benefits, you can take hostel, you have room. So I said, just give me sleeping bag, I care myself, you know.
Oh, it's really cold out tonight, Chris.
I know, but this is my punishment for I start drinking again after 4 years sober, you know. Last Christmas was first Christmas without my family. Spent Christmas on the street. I must pay price for my mistake.
You're already paying the price. You don't have to be sleeping outside to punish yourself for falling off the wagon, Chris. It's an almost impossible thing to beat, alcoholism.
Yeah, but I was fully sober, you know.
What help did you have to get sober before?
I go to AA meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And I have mental health in Saifa with Paula.
Mm-hmm.
And I take too many hours in my work.
Mm.
And I stopped going to AA meetings. I broke into rules. I was lonely and tired.
Oh, Chris.
And I start drinking again. After my work, I go to 24 hours as done. I buy a bottle of vodka and I start drinking again. You know this book? I love read the books.
Mm.
You know this book, Little Prince?
Little Prince, yeah.
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 When he meet alcoholic, yeah, and he ask him, why you drink? Because I want to forget. What do you want to forget? Because I want to forget. I drink. It was the same like me. When I start first bottle of vodka, I was angry for myself. So I go for another one because I want to forget. I buy this first one. You know?
Oh, Chris. Is there anything I can get you now? Would you like me to get you some hot food or anything?
I have water in me. I have some food in my bag, so I am fine for now.
You are very sweet to turn down my offer. I'm so sorry.
It's my fault.
It's
my choice. I go to Asda and I take this bottle of vodka. I want to buy chocolate because I feel low, you know. But I take a bottle of vodka.
The voices you can hear in the background of my chat with Chris are customers who've popped out for a quick cigarette. They stand literally 2 feet from where we are sat on the floor, utterly blind to Chris and the other rough sleepers a few metres away. I'm not criticising them. I am them on a night out. But it highlights how normalised it's become to see rough sleepers in the city centre, so much so that we're no longer moved or shocked. Another homeless guy stops to check on Chris.
Hello.
You all right, my friend?
Yeah, fine.
Good man, good man.
Hiya.
Just need some help.
He does need some help. Aww. Some people are good on the streets, aren't they?
Because he remembered me when I was sober. I always help him. Now look what I'm doing now.
So you've gone from giving cigarettes to the homeless people to sitting here outside this restaurant with a blanket around you.
It's okay. I know I can be sober again. When I wake up, you know, pray to God, thank you God for another day for my life. My life is shit now, but I'm still alive, you know.
You're very brave for sharing your story with me, thank you.
When breakfast and lunch have been served and the drop-in is wrapping up for the day, other important activities begin, like rehearsals for Cypher Fireside's resident band, The Bubble.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on.
Whenever I spend time at Cypher Fireside, I'm humbled by the graciousness and humility of the clients. But today, it was the staff and volunteers who really blew me away. The unswerving desire to help just that little bit more than they're supposed to or have time or resources for. In short, the love they show day in, day out. Thank you to everyone who took part in this episode, and thank you so much for listening to Cypher Stories, giving a voice to the homeless.
Call me if you need a friend, call me.
Back to here and now, the corona crisis and lockdown, Carly Jones.
We want to reassure everybody that the local authority have been working incredibly hard to make sure that everybody is accommodated, and there is a sufficient amount of accommodation in the city at the moment to house everybody. That includes the purchasing of a hotel in the city centre to provide additional capacity to meet that demand. So in this strange new world in which we're operating, actually at the moment accommodation isn't our primary concern for the vulnerable people that we help. Our primary concern at the moment is around people's mental well-being and the physical impacts as well that are indirectly associated with the crisis that we are facing. So what we have been doing is making sure that we are doing safe and well checks on all of those individuals that normally come through our doors on a day-to-day basis. That's been done over the phone, but also we will do outreach visits to the most vulnerable people, obviously in line with what the government are currently guiding us around social distancing. We are very worried about the long-term impact of all of this on individuals and how they will recover from this period of isolation. We are concerned for people with addictions and how they will be able to manage through this period of time, not being able to go out. But most of all, we are concerned about the loneliness and the isolation that people are going to be feeling during this time. We are making every effort to keep connected with those individuals, to give them access to what they need. We are applying for emergency grants. We have been incredibly well supported by the general public, but we need help on an ongoing basis because, unfortunately, we have experienced quite a significant financial impact as a result of this as well. We are keeping a skeleton staff here at Cypher Fireside, so anybody that does come to our doors that we haven't already picked up and accommodated, we are still able to do so. And our other services, our wider services like tenancy support, death and welfare benefits support, and whatever other needs people have, we're continuing to offer those services on a telephone appointment based approach. It's not ideal. It's certainly not where we would like to be. And as I've mentioned, we do have significant concerns about the mental well-being of our very vulnerable people in the city. But with the help of everybody coming together and joining our services together and offering what we can, we hope we can get through this difficult time, and we plan to be back open as soon as possible.
In the next episode, we hope to catch up with some of Cypher's clients and find out how they are coping in this new, even more uncertain world. Meanwhile, stay safe, and thank you for listening to Cypher Stories, giving a voice to the homeless.